Okay, I'm going to call to order this meeting of the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. It is Monday, April 17th, 2017. We have our final pre-deadline work to be done today. But before we get into that, I would just ask, as you can see, we're missing our dear member, Senator Bertrager, for terrible reasons. Senator Linthicum has stepped up to take his place while the good senator is gone. But I'd just like to ask us to take a moment just to think about Senator Bertrager and what he and his family are going through now. Okay, thank you.
Amen.
You'll notice if you've been following the agenda of this committee that there are some bills that were originally scheduled for today. We are not having a work session on. We had, in some cases, we had hoped to find amendments that would bring the parties together, but were unable to do so. And in other cases, we found some alternative ways of dealing with the problem that didn't need to be in statute. And I'll just mention a couple of those that I want to put on the record. Some of you will remember Senate Bill 222, which had to do with veterinarians having to let their clients know that they had the ability to, that they weren't required to get a prescription there at the office. They could ask for a prescription and go elsewhere. We came to an agreement with the Veterinarian Board and the Veterinary Association that that will be done through poster being put up in the doctor's offices, in the veterinarian's offices, and that so it didn't need, they didn't need to be ordered to do so. They were willing to do so. So that's how that's being handled. Senate Bill 789, which you'll remember, had to do with the threat of Arundo Donax, giant cane. Those of you who were in the room for that hearing, you know, I think learned a lot about that invasive plant. And the Native Plant Society, which has been the lead organization working on this problem, is going to be working with the Weed Board to make sure that the problem is controlled and contained. No, yes, not that Weed Board. Not the Prezonsky Weed Board, but no. And then Senate Bill 197, the so-called Dairy Air Bill, is also not being pursued through statute, but the Three Mile Canyon Farms and the Lost Valley Ranch have agreed to work. We'll be doing a work group in the interim and developing a list of best management practices to make sure that those that the emissions from those dairies are under control and going to be looking at research to make sure that the problem of haze in the gorge is dealt with and is being attended to, and just to keep working on this issue. And I don't know, Len, have I spoken fairly about that? They both committed to working with us on this, and with the Department of Agriculture and Oregon State University, we're all going to put our heads together and work on this. So, Okay. Then let me go through our work sessions. I'm going to be taking these out of order, so bear with me. We're going to start with Senate Bill 432. Senate Bill 432. Beth, you want to remind us what that is?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 432 would authorize counties and local governments meeting certain criteria to adopt a comprehensive plan and land use regulations that do not comply with statewide land use planning goals. The measure would require jurisdictions that adopt such plans and subsequently cease to meet the specified criteria to amend plans within 1 year to comply with the statewide goals. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal.
Thank you. Vice Chair Olson?
Chair Denver, I move Senate Bill 432 without recommendation and that a subsequent referral to the Committee on Rules be added.
Vice Chair Olson has moved Senate Bill 432 without recommendation and that a subsequent referral to the Committee on Rules be added. Discussion. I'll start up, colleagues. This bill needs work, and one of the issues that we need to make sure is taken care of is we want to make sure that this bill does not have a negative impact on our attempts to deal with the sage-grouse problem in those counties. And so that's one of the reasons that it will be worked on in the Rules Committee. Sorry about that, Senator Roblin, but you'll have some work.
Yeah, and then they'll probably send it to Ways and Means. There too.
Any discussion? Okay. Is there any objection? Okay. Motion carries. Senate Bill 432 will go to the Rules. I will open a work session on Senate Bill 643. Senate Bill 643. Colleagues, you'll remember this was the one having to do with whitewater rafting helmets. And in his last meeting here with us, Senator Bertschinger offered to have an amendment drafted, and we did, in fact, receive those amendments. Those are the dash fives. And why don't you go ahead and move it?
Chair Denver, I move to adopt the dash five amendment stated 4/14/17.
Okay, Vice Chair Olson has moved to adopt the dash five amendments dated 4/14/17. Beth, you want to tell us what the dash fives do?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the dash five would require outfitters or guides using boats to carry passengers on any section of a river rated class three or higher to offer to all passengers a helmet that meets standards established by the Marine Board by rule. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal.
643 does too.
Oh, no. You can just add that.
Yeah, so just do it like that.
And then
he hasn't made a motion yet.
Oh, okay.
Did we accept the dash five amendment?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to move this
very
to rules?
Yeah.
We're going to move this
yes.
to rules? All right. Chair Dumbrell, I move.
We didn't pass the amendment, did we?
We did, didn't we?
No, we just had a discussion right
that's
now.
What I was, yeah. That's what I thought.
Sorry. Okay. Is there any.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any discussion of the dash fives? Okay, is there any objection to the dash fives? Say none. It's ordered.
Chair Denbrough, I move Senate Bill 643 as amended without recommendation that a subsequent referral to the Committee on Rules be added.
Yeah, I think it can actually have a recommendation.
Yeah.
Or the do pass recommendation?
Yeah.
Chair Denbrough, I rescind my last motion.
No, it's fine.
Chair Denbrough, I move Senate Bill 643 as amended with a do pass recommendation that a subsequent referral to the Committee on Rules be added.
Okay, Vice Chair Olson has moved Senate Bill 643 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that a subsequent referral to the Committee on Rules be added. Discussion. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, so ordered. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 643, and I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 644. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Dimmer, I move Senate Bill 644 without recommendation that a subsequent referral to the committee and rules be added.
Vice Chair Olson has moved Senate Bill 644 without recommendation and that a subsequent referral to the Committee on Rules be added. Discussion. So, colleagues, this one is similar to Senate Bill 432. We're not quite there yet in terms of agreement among the parties, and one of the issues that's still out there has to do with the sage-grouse issue. We'll see what happens, our good colleagues in rules will work on it, and I've offered to be part of that effort as well. So, any further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. This will go to rules. Okay, I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 871. Actually, before you go into it, Beth, you want to remind us what Senate Bill 871 is?
Mr. Chair, members, there is a -3 amendment for Senate Bill 871, which would authorize the city to establish a program for the demolition of residences or residential buildings and establish this program requirements. It would also require the Oregon Health Authority to establish a lead containment certification program to certify contractors to perform demolitions of buildings built before 1978 in cities with a demolition program. Further requires the Environmental Quality Commission to establish procedures for conducting the asbestos survey that's currently required by law.
Okay. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Dimmer, I move to adopt the -3 amendment dated 4/17/17.
Okay. Vice Chair Olson has moved to adopt the -3 amendments dated 4/17/17. Colleagues, before we get into discussion, I want to thank the Vice Chair for his help with this. I think the -3s meet the concerns that we heard during our public hearing on this bill last week. Any discussion? Okay. Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries.
Chair Dimmer, I move Senate Bill 871 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Olson has moved Senate Bill 871 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and requests that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion, colleagues? Okay, is there any objection to the motion? All right, seeing none, motion carries. No,
we're going in order so far.
Yeah.
You only get three left.
I'm going to do the easy. Easier ones first.
I've been waiting.
I'm going to do the easier ones first. So let's go to Senate Bill 1036.
Okay. Just to mix it up.
I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 836. 1036. Okay. Why don't you make a motion?
Do you want her to talk about it first?
Either way.
Chair Dimmer, I move to adopt the -3 amendments dated 4/14/17.
Vice Chair Olson has moved to adopt the -3 amendments dated 4/14/17. Okay, Beth, you want to tell us what?
Mr. Chair, members, there's a -3 amendment. This bill would now, with that amendment, amend the statutory definition of surface mining to exclude certain activities at landfill sites and also excavation or grading operations that are related to the maintenance or construction of utilities, drainage facilities, and irrigation facilities, so long as the material is used on site and not sold into the commercial market as aggregate.
Okay, Willie, you want to come up and So, Willie, my understanding is that these are consensus amendments?
That's what we have for you, Mr. Chair. We did, you may recall, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Willie Tiffany with the Oregon Refuge and Recycling Association. You may recall, we did have some concerns. This bill was drafted primarily as a technical bill to exempt certain activities covered under DEQ permit at landfills from the definition of surface mining. As Dogami, the director, likes to say, the way the surface mining definition works in Oregon, it's as broad as possible, and then different activities are exempted over time as it comes to light that those activities are really not surface mining but may qualify for the definition. There was some concern from the conservation community, and I think rightly so, so I appreciate the conservation community bringing some issues forward. And specifically, those issues kind of revolved around what other activities could be happening at landfill that aren't associated with the traditional landfill activities. So in other words, the way DEQ permits a landfill today, they'll strictly permit the footprint of the landfill. That's pretty specific geographic designation. And then there'll be ancillary permits for the other activities that are associated to serve that landfill, like access roads, stormwater maintenance ponds, leachate, collection facilities, energy, methane to energy conversion types of facilities. Those are all covered under a DEQ permit. However, a landfill property owner could be engaged in certain activities. We certainly didn't have an example of this that either slipped through the cracks in terms of the DEQ permitting process and that Dogami is not aware of. So we set out to try to address that issue. We engaged in a work group at your direction, Mr. Chair, and thank you, and thank the committee administrator for pulling that work group together, specifically Thousand Friends, Dogami, DSL, DEQ, OCAPA, Association of Oregon Counties, and our association. We did come up with an agreement to try to clarify at least the first section, subsection F, which is the original bill, to only apply to permitted activities. And you'll see in the dash three amendments on line 7, it says if excavation or movement of materials is covered by a permit issued by the Department of Environmental Quality, then it goes into the regular sites of the statute. That is a requirement of the exemption. So that clarifies that issue. Additionally, Dogami and DEQ have decided to continue to meet on this issue in the interim. Dogami is doing kind of a housekeeping rulemaking this interim, and I think the two departments kind of found some common ground through this process and might do some permit sharing or at least coordinating on how they issue permits. I do want to mention the second part of this amendment, which is subsection G that starts on line 10. That was the original dash two amendment, so that came from the Association of Oregon Counties, and those refer to county activities with respect to movement of material around utilities, irrigation works, and other facilities. So again, thank you, and thank you to Ms. McGee in Legislative Council. She was the one who was able to come up with this language that met the needs of everyone, and I believe by Friday afternoon we had either neutrality or support from all those in the work group. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Willie. Thanks for your hard work with this. Any questions?
Willie needs to identify himself.
No, he did.
Yeah, did he?
Yeah.
Did I miss that?
Yep.
Where was I?
You were saying he needs to identify himself.
He did.
As he was identified.
As he was identified. Yeah. Sorry, Willie.
I'm still Willie for the record. All right, thank you.
Great.
Was that still Willie or free Willie?
Yeah, right.
Okay, so the dash threes have been moved. Is there any discussion? Okay, is there any objection to our adopting the dash three amendments? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Denver, I move Senate Bill 1036 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson has moved Senate Bill 1036 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion of the amended bill? Is there any objection to the amended bill? Seeing none. The motion passes. I'll carry it. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1036. And
there's only two left. You can't mix
right.
them too much.
Yeah. So I'm going to open the work session on Senate Bill 1008. I have a sense that most people are here for that. And Senate Bill 1008 is the diesel bill, and we have both a dash one amendment and a dash two amendment. I'm going to want us to discuss both of those. I'll say now this bill is also going to rules because it needs more work. And I think that'll become clearer as I explain where we are with the bills. Why don't we start off talking about the dash ones? Beth, do you have a motion for that?
I do.
Vice Chair, you want to make this motion?
Sure. Chair Dimmer, I move to adopt the dash one amendment dated 4/4/17.
Vice Chair Olson has moved the dash one amendment dated 4/4/17. Beth, you want to explain to us what the dash ones do? And while you're hunting for your papers, I'll just say, you know, in general, as I understand it, the dash ones take certain portions of Senate Bill 1008 those that relate to the VW settlement, those that relate to school buses, I think, and those that relate to the inventory of off-road equipment. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, the dash one would replace the original measure with the exception of some of the whereas clauses. It would add grants and loans for replacements to permissible uses of money in the Clean Diesel Engine Fund and makes other modifications to provisions for those grants and loans. It authorizes Oregon to receive monies pursuant to the Volkswagen Environmental Mitigation Trust Agreement, deposits those monies into the Clean Diesel Engine Fund, and uses monies to award grants for reducing emissions from diesel engines. It specifies allocation of the grant monies from those agreement monies. The dash one would also require the Department of Environmental Quality to hire a contract with a third-party organization to complete an inventory of non-road diesel engines used in Oregon. Sets forth requirements for that third-party organization and for the inventory and how the inventory is used by the department. It requires completion no later than July 1, 2019, and appropriates monies to the department to cover the cost of hiring or contracting with that third party.
My sense is that the dash one amendments are include elements that had universal agreement among those that have been working on this. As you know, colleagues, I've been working on this for, we had a work group for the last year. So these were all parts that everyone agreed to. I will argue that they're not adequate, but they are a starting point, I believe. If I can do this, I'd like to hold open this motion. Can I hold open this motion while we talk about the dash twos as well?
I was going to ask for the comparison. It looks like it's the funding issue. So,
So do I then, do we need a motion to open?
No, just do it under this one.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'll play the part of asking, what are the differences between the dash ones and the dash twos?
You know, good colleague, it's funny you should ask. on your desk, I have a sort of, I passed out a cheat sheet, and this is also posted on all those people in the audience. A section-by-section overview of the dash twos. The dash twos take the base bill and take those elements from the base bill that are in the dash ones and, I think, refine them. As the dash ones go to the Rules Committee, even in those areas where there is overlap, I think the dash two language is preferable. And I'll explain what I mean by that. So the section-by-section overview, the bill starts with the whereas clauses, which establish the public health need for this program. It articulates a strategy of hastening timeline for conversion to newer, that is post-2006, cleaner on-road and off-road engines. And as you may remember, starting in 2007, federal law required all newly built engines to meet health standards. In the dash one amendments, this hastening would happen in part via money coming out of the diesel fund, the VW settlement fund, particularly with respect to school buses and some other things. Okay, the dash twos include 1% for clean diesel in public contracts. You may remember this from the base bill, but it has changed. And let me just say that the changes in the dash twos are a result of lots of conversations with a lot of people and a lot of concerns, result of concerns that were expressed during the public hearing and in oral and written testimony. So there was concern about what we originally had as a 1% requirement for all public contracts, for all local governments. This has become a permissive program focused on those local governments that have an interest in setting their own clean diesel contracting requirements. And there are many in the Portland metro area, City of Portland, Multnomah County, the Port of Portland, I believe Washington County, that are working on a common set of clean diesel contracting requirements. There's concern that there may be difficulty for smaller companies, minority-owned, women-owned, emerging small businesses, in meeting those requirements after they've received they've won a bid because they just don't have the equipment. And so this would allow them to use some of the state dollars that have been given to them to do the project to help come into compliance either through retrofits or replacements. Again, this would be at the discretion of the local government. Intended to help small contractors comply with clean diesel goals set by local governments, and this program would sunset in 2028. The next section of the bill provides various definitions related to the Oregon Clean Diesel Program. I think those are pretty consistent with what's in the Dash 1 amendment. The next section 7 of the Dash 2s, have to do with school buses. And just to remind you that we have statute, a bill that was passed in 2009, House Bill 2795, which set a deadline of 2017 by which school districts would have to retrofit their buses. Actually, let me back up. They had till 2025 to replace their pre-2007 buses. But if they wanted to retrofit, they had to do it by 2017. So retrofitting is no longer an option for school districts. And this is a problem, and it's a problem that needs to be addressed in this bill. Because for some district, retrofits can be a more inexpensive way of addressing the problem, and for some school districts, it works out better for their overall replacement schedule of buses. So we heard that from some of the school districts. So what this section of the bill does is it removes or extends the sunset on retrofits from 2017 to 2025. So they have, you know, we're being neutral on whether they decide to use their VW settlement money for retrofits or for replacements. And that, I believe, is included in the dash ones as well. The next section, and again, this is an overlap largely, is the off-road diesel engine inventory. And one of the things we all agreed to is, while we know what kind of diesel equipment is out there on the on-road side, because vehicles have to be registered with ODOT, we don't really know what's out there and where they're located and what their volume of emissions is, what their volume of use is on the off-road side. And so we all agreed that as soon as possible, we need to do an inventory. So this is calling for an inventory by July 1st, 2018. In the dash twos, the and this is a point of difference. The dash twos, unlike the dash ones, are a smaller inventory because it exempts certain industries like agriculture, forestry, that are exempted from the California off-road program, which if we enter eventually into any kind of regulatory program, we have to do it exactly as California's doing it. And so it seemed not really necessary for us to include agriculture and forestry. Also because, as I think we've discussed, the real problem, I mean, diesel emissions are a problem everywhere, but they're particularly a problem in the urban areas, in those areas where agriculture, forestry, I might argue mining, don't happen. And so that's less of a concern. And if, you know, given that we're in a tough fiscal situation, it seems that we should try to make the program as financially manageable as possible. So that's a difference between the dash twos and the dash ones. The dash twos also include, after the inventory has been done, an ongoing registration program for off-road diesel, similar to what we have for trucks, you know, on the on-road side, where they register through ODOT. So we continue to know where they're located, and so we can have a sense, again, of the rural versus the urban, and know where we have problems. There would be modest registration fees adequate to operate the program as part of it, and it exempts the same equipment that would be exempted from the inventory, that is the agriculture, the forestry, perhaps the mining. Sections 14 through 16 establish standards. And you'll remember the first one from the base bill, that is starting with the effective date of this bill, businesses will no longer be able to add pre-2007 engines to their fleets. And the purpose here is to assure that older, dirtier engines don't come into the state and into high-risk parts of the state. So this would apply both to on-road and off-road. DEQ would be authorized to allow extensions where needed, and it may be that there are areas that would be appropriate. You know, I've heard of somebody brought up in a work group, brought up the example of the rural firefighting engine, right? Firefighting districts, which can never afford a new truck. And I would argue that I don't have a problem with them purchasing an older truck, given their location and their need. That seems to me to be an appropriate area for an exemption. This would not include the equipment in those off-road industries exempted under the California program. Then, in terms of the requirement to phase out existing engines from fleets. You'll remember that in the original bill, we had a blank there as to when that would happen, when they would have to begin that process. And what the Dash 2s do is they set a date 10 years from now, which seemed like a pretty reasonable time. And rather than statutorily dictate how that, how we get from here to there, how they phase out, leave it up to the different industries to figure out, knowing that they have to do it by within 10 years. So that is that's the big change there. Again, DEQ would be authorized to allow extensions and other forms of flexibility. And again, this 2028 deadline would not apply to the off-road equipment exempted under the California program. Then we get to the clean diesel engine fund uses. And this, too, has similarities with the Dash 1s, although it includes some things that people have asked me to call out in the legislation that are not called out in the Dash 1s or that were not in the base bill, but that make sense that we do that. So Sections 17 through 25 creates the clean diesel engine fund, initially filled with dollars from the VW settlement, which is around $80 million dollars at this point. It may go up a little more, and lays out priorities and requirements for awards. The first distributions will go to the two school bus retrofits and replacements in order to meet or exceed the deadline in statute, as was in number four above. Subsequent distributions will prioritize areas of known health risk and high emissions. Those will be considered first. And then other factors will be considered, fleet size, whether the applicant is a minority women-owned emerging small business, disadvantaged business enterprise, whether the applicant has the ability to leverage outside dollars, that will be taken into account. Likely targets after school buses, refuse and recycling trucks, local delivery trucks, drayage trucks, transit, airport ground support equipment, local government vehicles. We were asked to be specific in the bill to call out the fact that repowers and replacements, and repower just means you change the engine, whereas replacement, the entire piece of equipment, may include conversions to other cleaner fuels, such as compressed natural gas, biogas, and electricity. Those are called out in Section 6, the definition section now. And I should say something else that's I didn't include here, but it's in the bill, this came as a request, is that, if a company is given an award to replace their equipment or to change the engine, they have to scrap the existing piece of equipment, so it can't just be sent somewhere else. And what was not in the base bill, but what is specified here, is that that equipment, once it's been made inoperable, also needs to be recycled. And so that's included in the bill as well. In the base bill, there is the repeal of the state preemption on truck idling, and that preemption remains in the Dash 2, but only because the work group that's working on it hasn't yet come to agreement on everything about it. The intent is that the statewide preemption will not be lifted, that we want a statewide program, but we want to modernize that program. For example, there are trucks out there that are newer trucks that have, you'll notice them on the cab door or somewhere near the cab door, they have a sticker that says they are certified clean idle. And if that's the case, then the idling restrictions that are in the program don't apply to them, because they are not there's not a health risk from their idling. And in addition, there are some of the elements of the existing program can be tightened up so that we have less idling by older engines in areas of high population, which are a real concern. The rest of the bill is just kind of the usual stuff, conforming amendments. There's an appropriation, a blank appropriation for the inventory, and then the others. So that's what the Dash 2 amendments do. I think they're pretty great, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have about them.
On the first part where it talks about the 1%,
yeah,
can we go over that again as to how that's funded?
So the intent here is that the local governments would be able to, it would give them the ability to use state dollars that they've received. If they've received state dollars where state dollars are funding at least 30% of their project, and that it's a project in excess of $2 million, that they can use some of those dollars to help their MWESBs achieve their clean diesel goals. So, you know, we see this as, you know, a way to use public contracting to help move the needle on this.
So,
yeah.
And follow up, so that would mean for like either retrofit or replacement.
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair.
In your diesel engine in sections 14 through 16, I guess it is, where you starting in January 1, 2028, 10 years after the effective date.
Mm-hmm.
One consideration I think you should have taken into account is much construction equipment. It doesn't work 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't idle. It sits relatively unused in construction yards. And the point I'm trying to make is many of those pieces of equipment were purchased before 2007, and they could last 15 or 20 years, which would put a horrendous burden on a contractor that needs a changeover, five or six track hose or a blade or crane or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That causes me heartburn.
I think that's an excellent point, and that is one of those things that I'm hoping we can work out while the bill is in rules how to address those situations. You know, I'll be the first person to say that there's more work that needs to be done with the Dash 2s. And, you know, hopefully we can get to that level of refinement such that, you know, we feel comfortable with a date like this. You know, if not, we'll figure out how to get there.
Okay, thank you.
The bill, as it is now, allows DEQ to make exemptions or, I'm sorry, exceptions or do extensions. And my hope would be, as we continue to work on the bill, to come to a better sense and agreement on, you know, giving them direction on how to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Yes.
Excuse me. Thank you. Being somewhat new to this, in your conversation, you were describing the requirement to make those non-operative, you know, if they were using the funding, whatever. And I didn't see it in I wasn't sure if it was in the faceplate bill 1008 or in the dash 2 or where that was. As you were describing it, I wasn't able to see where that language showed up.
Okay. It should be in some form in all three. And the only difference is the dash 2s mention recycling in a way that doesn't. You know, that's not in the other bills. On the dash twos, it's at the top of page 14.
I
feel like it's in a couple of places.
Yeah, it may be in a couple of places. Scrap means to destroy and render inoperable, and recycle is a...
that's in the definition section.
Yeah.
But there's some place in the bill that...
So that's what you have to do.
That, you know, is the reason we have that definition, that says you have to do that.
And is this referring to school buses as well as construction equipment? This will impact school districts enormously to tell them they have to make inoperable scrap, recycle literally thousands of school buses within Oregon.
Actually, not as many as you think. They've been replacing for a while, so there's about 350.
I'd love to see the documentation for that, because I would bet it's more than that.
Yeah. I'll get it for you.
That was okay.
Okay.
Yeah, we you know, we had a work group on diesel and received reports from the Oregon Department of Education, which I can send you their figures on. That we got information on the number of school buses, the age of the school buses, and, you know, those that have been converted and those that have yet to be converted or replaced. So, yeah. But yes, that, you know, they're going to be given a new bus. That
now they are. They could retrofit them if they've done it before.
Yeah, they're either going to be getting a retrofit, and if it's a retrofit, then obviously scrapping doesn't come into play. But if we're giving them a new bus with the VW trust money, then they are obliged. And I believe that this may be under the terms of the VW settlement as well, that it has to be put out of commission.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah.
Okay. So those are the elements of the dash twos. And my intention today would be to have us move the dash ones because it seems like that's something we all agree to, and then work in rules to get as much of the dash twos in as we feel we should, as well as other things that improve the bill. With that, is there any further discussion of the motion to adopt the dash ones? Okay, is there any objection to moving the dash ones? Seeing none, so ordered, the dash ones are adopted.
Chair Dunbar, I move Senate Bill 1008 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Okay, Vice Chair Olson has moved Senate Bill 1008 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and requests that it be referred to the Committee on Rules. Discussion, Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think everybody in this room will understand that you've been working on this by your detailed description of the dash twos. I look forward in Rules Committee to look at aspects of that dash twos that could possibly get agreement of everybody, like the dash ones did, and we'll see where we go from there and on that discussion. The one about having what we used to call it, you called it dumping, I think, in the first discussion of having the bills. We'd love to consider that. I think in the dash ones, you'll see there is a place there where in the inventory we want to make sure that that's happening so we can actually know if it's happening and prevent it, because I don't think anybody wants that to happen. We don't think that's appropriate. So, and the other things you brought up, I think there are some things there that can be looked at. You know, I've talked with lots of the counties. They're very concerned about this because of the different aspects of the bills. And I think we need to make sure that as we move forward with this and we make incremental steps or however, that everybody agrees we need to reduce the amount of diesel exhaust in the air, especially in the urban areas. And I think I think the wording that you may have in the dash twos about how we will spend that money in the urban areas, that can get clarified a little bit more too, because I think everybody agrees that that's where it needs to go. So we need to look at those things and make sure that we use this money that we have in the best possible way. So look forward to that, and I appreciate the motion. So thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? Yes, Senator Linthicum.
Just in terms of recognizing diesel emissions and what goes on, the market has far more power than we give it credit for. Right now, everybody's bulked up on DEF, the diesel emission fluid. Truck stops all over are utilizing that because it's been approved. But what we don't see is we don't see all the alternatives and the innovative ideas and the other opportunities for very ingenious men to come up with alternative plans and make better headway than the DEF, the diesel emission fluid that we're now requiring be put everywhere in every which way. And I think we're going to see potential problems by fomenting these rules and saying it's got to be done like this and it's got to be done like that without allowing more room for the market to intervene and come up with solutions which could be better than anything we see on the table in terms of technology today. So I have reservations with regard to approaching it with this you know, kind of all or nothing kind of pattern that we see developing here, because there's enormous throughput. DEF's the best example I could come up with in my own mind, with how it's working and why it's working and how the industry is bulking up. You see DEF tanks all over the place. And the reason they're all over the place is because, quote, this is the accepted method that's on the street today. And because of that, we're shortchanging all of the other possible opportunities that are out there. Everyone's running to this solution because it's the solution that's, quote, recognized. And there are literally other opportunities out there that aren't being taken advantage of. And what I hate to see is us run ourselves down this alley and have no other way out except for the one way, you know, that the legislature has seen fit to justify with these monies. There are literally hundreds of unknown ideas out there, and the reason they're literally hundreds is because there are hundreds of engineers and technicians and people coming out of Oregon Tech and coming out of PSU and where not, who have different, who can foster different ideas for tackling the diesel emissions problem. So I'm a little hesitant just to go down this one track, because once we do that, that's the track we blessed, and that's the track all the Volkswagen money, the Volkswagen settlement money goes into, and yet there's all of these other opportunities that we forego, and foregoing those opportunities strike me as a bad direction to get ourselves wedged into.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Senator. I will say that, you know, and I actually don't know anything about that, the DEF. All I know about is engines. That's what we've been focusing on because, you know, since 2007, under federal requirements, engines that are, you know, any new engine has to comply with certain standards that are virtually cancer-free, you know, I mean, that don't, that they're free from negative health effects. And so the challenge that's behind all this is how do we get conversion to those newer engines more quickly? And that's what we're kind of struggling with, both through a combination of grants to individuals to help them get to those newer engines or retrofits to get them to the same place, or through you know, setting standards that will encourage that kind of stimulation. And that's the point of the 2028 deadline. You know, whether one agrees with it or not, that, you know, the point is to put a marker out there to tell industry, start thinking as you're doing your business plan, your replacement plan, to be thinking about this. So that's sort of the rationale behind it.
Am I to take it as a default that nobody came and testified with regard to diesel emission fluid and how that technology works and what's going on in the marketplace today?
No, I don't believe so. We haven't really talked about the diesel fuel at all. That's not part of this. You know, we did hear that biodiesel is free from the adverse health effects. But that's about all that we heard.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Any further discussion?
I'm still awake.
Okay. All right. Is there any objection to the motion to send Senate Bill 1008 as amended to rules? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1008, and before I forget, colleagues, we're going to have to reopen the work session on Senate Bill 871 because there was a problem, a mistake. Okay, so I'm going to open the work session on Senate Bill 871, and Beth, could you tell us what we need to do?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members, I neglected to double-check that the fiscal statement had been released from LFO, and they released it 6 minutes after you voted on it. So if you would just go through the motion and the vote one more time, it will be legit.
Okay. So do we have to vote to reconsider?
Yes. I asked Lori. She said no. She said you just need to restate the motion, and you're good, and vote. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to reopen our work session on Senate Bill 871. And
you will want to find a paper. There it is. Yeah.
Chair Denver, do we need to adopt, do the depth amendment?
No.
No, we don't need to do that? Okay. Chair Denver, I move Senate Bill 871 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Olson has moved Senate Bill 871 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and he requests that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Colleagues, is there any discussion? Is there any objection to this motion? Seeing none, motion carries. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 871. And I'll reopen our, and I'm sorry, I'll open our work session on Senate Bill 892. And Senate Bill 892, colleagues, has to do with the notification of pesticide application. We have, following the hearing the other month, whenever it was, we had dash four amendments drafted, and those are before you today. And in having these amendments drafted, we added some whereases, and I want to just go through them if you'll indulge me. Whereas applications of pesticide are used for vegetation control on large parcels in private and state forests, and whereas those applications can occur near residences and areas visited by the public, and whereas many individuals are concerned that they may be subjected to unintended pesticide spray drift, and whereas many individuals want to know when a nearby aerial application of pesticide is about to occur so that they may make arrangements to remove themselves or their children, pets, or livestock from potential exposure, and whereas following a nearby aerial application of pesticide, individuals have an interest in knowing which pesticides were used and the weather conditions during the application, and whereas the State Forestry Department electronic reporting and notification system, commonly referred to as FERNS, will allow those who are interested to be easily provided with real-time notification of impending aerial applications of pesticide, and whereas the electronic reporting and notification system must include recognition that the exact date of an aerial application of pesticide is subject to change due to weather, workload, and other factors, and whereas the legitimate operational requirements of operators, timber owners, landowners, and pesticide applicators must be balanced against the legitimate desire of the public for notification and transparency, and whereas the State Board of Forestry and the State Forester have the expertise and capacity to craft a State Forestry Department program that balances the competing interests, requirements, and desires. Now, therefore, you have before you the dash fours. So, you know, the goal, you'll remember, colleagues, that, you know, there were some issues raised at the public hearing about how long the notification window should be. If you are, before an applicator would have to notify the department that the operation didn't happen for whatever reason. In the base bill, it was a 5-day window that they had. We heard from industry that that was too short a time. We heard some people mention 30 days as appropriate, 2 weeks as appropriate, and it seemed to me that it's probably not the job of this body to figure out that level of detail, that's something that we should leave up to the experts. And, you know, the forester and the state board, through their very public rulemaking process, seems like that's the appropriate way that we should be doing business. And so that's what these dash four amendments are about. They also made a couple of other changes. You know, the issue came up about you know, a lot of these applications are over over land that is nowhere near people, right? It's in the middle of large parcels of, you know, forest land. And so we wanted to make it clear that the requirement to notify didn't apply to them, because we don't have the problem there of drift. And so the bill specifically exempts them. It clarifies that, you know, it directs the Board of Forestry that as you're putting this together, you know, don't go after those lands that are not adjacent to the public, because that's not necessary. That would be overreach on your part. And it seems sensible to me. So therefore, I bring before you the dash fours, and why don't we move them before we have a discussion of it.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the dash four amendment dated 4/13/17.
Senator Brzozinski has moved to adopt the dash four amendments dated April 13th, 2017. Discussion. Yes.
Thank you. I had a number of questions previously, and I am of the opinion that we should ask the Department of Forestry to have a conversation and bring back to us what they think is a reasonable thing after having conversations with the forest industry and all those other people. I don't think turning over our authority to the Department of Forestry is the right thing to do at this time, because I think there's a lot of stuff we don't know. I'm concerned at the last time that we're going to put a situation out there where the timber industry is just going to file, because you can file as many as you want, every day of the month, so you don't really know where they're going. Weather and other conditions make it really difficult. We have, in the state, and I handed you a document, but we have trainings that are going on for people to disrupt activities in our forests. We had a really bad problem with that a while back when we had spiking of trees and other kinds of things. And so I'm just not sure that we're ready to have this this going that way. I think ferns, which we've just started putting out there, is going to start doing some of this. I think we need to have best practices where the timber industry goes and talks to their neighbors. But when you make access to people who don't consider any of this kind of stuff right, they can disrupt those activities in ways that are dangerous to themselves, dangerous to the other people and the applicators, and I'm just not convinced that we're ready for that stuff right now. So I would be against the dash fours and the bill itself, actually.
Further discussion?
Apologies again. In your narrative, you describe the and you use the term overreach to describe
we want to make it clear, you know, the reason that I appreciate this approach is that we want to give clear direction to the board of what we're looking for here. And then through their public rulemaking process, to which industry has a very significant role, that would be, you know, that would be worked out there, as long as they're meeting the broad goals that we're laying out for them, which is to to try to give neighbors or people who are going to be traveling close to the areas where an application is happening some kind of warning. Right now, the warning can be as long as a year, which is obviously useless, right? And we heard from a number of members of the public what a concern that was for them. So they'd like to know as close to real time as possible if they need to watch out for their kids or their pets or themselves or their livestock. And, you know, that just seems very, very reasonable. And, you know, I can understand, you know, we heard the argument that this isn't something that the legislature should be taking on. And so, therefore, it seems to make sense that the people who should be taking it on are those who, you know, direct the industry through the, you know, the Board of Forestry. Senator Brzozinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I appreciate your adoption, or not adoption, but your forwarding the Dash 4 amendments. I mean, the whereas is really kind of, from the testimony we heard, kind of gives a perspective of what we are, in fact, wanting the Certified Smart, the agency itself, to be doing through the rulemaking. I'll be very frank that when you hear the testimony that what our rules that we have in our state compared to other states that have timber activity, they seem to be lacking in areas. And specifically, I think the notice is one of those areas. From my perspective, knowing that the buffer zone is 60 feet for aerial spraying, I mean, this seems like it's pretty small distance between where you have, you think about recently we were having spray that was close enough to a school in the Triangle Lake area. And then people, as you're saying, residential houses. And I understand and I appreciate those properties that are abutting other private timber land where there's not residency occupancy or federal timber lands. It's not necessary to have that type of notification. But I hope that Board of Forestry, even if the Dash 4 isn't adopted and moved forward, understands that this is something that we hope that they will take based on the testimony we've heard from individuals to try to get a better plan together, because it does, from my perspective, I have to agree that where you give notice a year that anything can happen within a year, that just seems like it's why even give notice? And I understand from what Senator Roblin said, and I, you know, personally, I have more faith in the industry that they would not be putting these notices out for every day. I got the impression, based on whatever we came up with, they could work with it, and I know I was willing to entertain a much broader length instead of simultaneous type of 24 hours, 48, 2 weeks or something, knowing that you do have issues with wind, weather, and all that that's going to dictate whether they can or can't spray on it any given day. It seems appropriate that we encourage the Board of Forestry to take these issues up, because if we didn't have a problem with many people coming across this state from all walks of life, from all social economic status, and you look at where there has been mistakes, unintentional or intentional spraying in the areas that have impacted people. I mean, you take down in the South Coast area, an area that I know is very supportive of the timber industry, but when they were inundated with these issues, I mean, something has to be, we need to fix it, and we need to have that deliberate discussion, and it seems like we're not having it here at this stage. And so I think it's very important, even just setting a record right now as we speak and discuss this measure and the Dash 4s, that the Board of Forestry and the Department of Forestry hopefully will be reaching out to try to get those interested parties together to sit down and start looking at how can we adjust, modify, update, and get a system that's more beneficial for everyone as to having proper notice of when something's going to occur. And I'll be very frank with you again, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Chair, or anyone else, my understanding, some of the other states, after an application occurs, it is known what has been sprayed, and we still don't have that here. And to me, those are the type of situations that, knowing how parks set up and how we have to try to solicit information that's not being required to be filed, it just doesn't seem like we have a process that works to inform, and I'd say protect, all interested parties that are either in the business or live close to where applications occur.
Thank you, Senator. Shelley, you want to call the roll?
Senator Lesicum?
No.
Senator Krasinski?
Aye.
Senator Roblin?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Chair Dunbar?
Aye. Motion fails. So I will close the work session on Senate Bill 892. And I do that because the base bill is not acceptable to anyone. So colleagues, that completes our business for today. We will be coming back on Wednesday, but not on Thursday this week.
Thank you.
Wednesday we had intended, and for a while it was posted, to have a joint meeting with the House for, you know, our ongoing discussions of climate change. We had a really exciting program, but we're not able to get all the players together. This is going to be a report, recent report from the Oregon Business Leaders Greenhouse Gas Emission, I'm sorry, let me start again. The Oregon Business Leaders Greenhouse Gas Emissions Reduction Task Force. They recently issued a report, Business Smart Strategies for Decarbonizing Oregon's Economy. And there are some really good people from Oregon business leaders who will be coming to speak with us, but they weren't all available on Wednesday, so we're going to be postponing that until they are available. So, colleagues, with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you very much.
I won't be here Wednesday. I got to go see my friend.
Thank you very much.
I won't be here Wednesday.